The psychedelic revolution is here. If you want to integrate your visionary experiences into your purpose, get clear on your entrepreneurial path, and help people while you do what you love, then this podcast is for you. Welcome to The Psychedelic Entrepreneur, Medicine for These Times. I'm your host, Beth Weinstein. I'm a spiritual business coach, three-time entrepreneur, and a lifelong student of psychedelics and sacred plant medicines. You carry your own unique medicine, and your medicine is what we need for these times. This podcast will help you to share your medicine so you can create transformation in the world. Listen in on conversations with psychedelic leaders, changemakers, and conscious entrepreneurs who are living proof that a better world is possible when you follow your heart and live in alignment with your soul. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I am so happy to have you here, and I'm happy to have Jessica Lagarde. I'm pronouncing that wrong. Hey, Jessica, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, and thank you for inviting me here today. So I'm looking forward to our talk.
Me too. I'm so happy. If you or the listeners haven't noticed, I am trying my best to feature actually more women than men on this podcast. Yes. for this reason in particular that we're going to get into today, to talk about women in the psychedelics, field or industry. I hate to even call it that. But Jessica is a storyteller, an earth and climate activist, psychedelic guide, and Women on Psychedelics co-founder. Her healing work with psychedelics has made her more aware not only of the crisis of our planet, but also of the mental crisis humanity is in. All of her work is informed in taking action in a way that serves the earth and our human collective in hopes of mobilizing inner healing towards outer action. And you can look at her links and follow her on social media. All the links are here in the show notes, but it's womenonpsychedelics.org. And Jessica, I want to hear all about this because I discovered you guys, I think, like literally right after you launched, what was it, like a year ago or a year and a half or so? Yeah. And it was like, I was immediately just, you know, my reaction was, wow, this is awesome. We totally need to be talking about women on psychedelics. But tell us, what was your journey? Like, what brought you to this point and what inspired you to even start Women on Psychedelics?
So basically, I have been working with psychedelics for almost 3 years now. But at first, it was just mostly recreationally and for my own healing. And then there was a point in time last year during the pandemic that I took part on a truffle ceremony here in Amsterdam alongside with Tian, our co-founder. And during the ceremony, there were a few problematic things that happened and that really brought a lot of stuff to our mind. And that's basically how we decided we wanted to start some sort of platform to share resources concerning harm reduction and women's safety, and really bring more about how women could find more information in this space and find their place in this space. So in August, end of August last year, so it's just exactly, almost a year ago, we started the platform. It's a volunteer-based platform. Everything that we have there has been done by contributors. So, like, not just us, but other women that joined us to write articles. And together, what we try to do is to normalize the talk around psychedelics and women's mental health. And we do that a lot by storytelling and having women sharing their stories. But as well, we do interviews with women working on the field to try to highlight their work a little bit more. So this is like, we could bring quite a few things so far. And the platform on Instagram has been growing quite fast. But of course, like, there are times that we have more content than other times. And I take things a little bit slower at the moment because I have all the other stuff going on with my work alongside that. So yeah, it has been an interesting journey for sure.
Yeah. And it's really great to have this conversation because when I had been working with psychedelics since I was 14, like pretty much most of my life, very long time. But when I started coming out more in public three and a half, four years ago around my medicine journey and how much it's impacted my life, it was very interesting. I noticed very fast how much this kind of industry was dominated by men, and not only that, but white men. Of course, thankfully, this is changing as more people are coming out of the psychedelic closet and having these conversations. I think part of the biggest issue is that people, a lot of people like me even, were kind of hiding, you know, hiding from the world, except like a small group of my friends. So I'm so glad you're doing this. Now, I'm curious, what is it that you do for your living and your business or your job? And how did you get onto that path? Because, you know, this podcast is all about people who've created like businesses or nonprofits or projects around psychedelics. But I'm always curious, you know, what your path has been with your career, as we call it.
Yeah. So basically, I think, you know, my path has been very bumpy, and it has gone like in several different directions, which I've pretty much, like, I see that with so many people that are working on the field right now. Like, you know, my studies background, originally I'm an architect and urban planner, which is something completely different. But during the past 5 years of my life, I have lived in five different countries, and I have traveled for more than 30 of them. And during this journey, like, my career path has changed a lot. And I basically ended up on the psychedelic path, first because I got in contact with psychedelics in a recreational way when I was living here in the Netherlands. But then as well, I was doing some work with travel blogging and as an earth and climate activist. So I have been writing a lot of stuff regarding the environment. And then once I started with Whoop, basically a lot of other opportunities started to come alongside with that. That's the cool thing, the unexpected part. So this is how I got involved even more with magic truffles here in Amsterdam, because they are legal. So I did a training with an organization here called Psychedelic Insights, and I work for them today as a guide. And what I do as well is that I continue doing storytelling. So I write articles now for different platforms. At the moment, I have articles for Psychedelics Today, Psychedelic Spotlight. And yeah, so like it's a bit of a mix of everything. Like every other entrepreneur or freelancer, we try to just basically pick a lot of different things that we are good and that we like, and then we push it all together and we create, kind of like the life that you want.
It's funny, yesterday I had an interview with someone and I said, it's like back in the old days, we were told to climb the ladder, you know, climb this corporate ladder. And these days it's climbing a jungle gym, because I had a very similar path. I was, you know, doing a very like typical corporate job, and I was like, you know, there's so much more to life. And what would happen if I just surrendered and followed the joy? And obviously, you know, I had work to stay alive. I wasn't totally going broke or homeless. But when you follow this passion, you know, like, I remember I did this huge project that I knew I wasn't going to make any money on, but it was with a really renowned musician and involved meditation and dance and healing. And it was amazing. And it opened up so many doors, you know, like these opportunities, you know, and then you meet people and then you talk about what you're interested in. And this is a common theme with so many people I interview on this podcast. And that's why I always love to know, what did you used to do? You know, architect or attorney, or like me, like corporate and then tech startups. But I love this. And I love that you're just, you know, you're following your passion and following that path of joy. And then also, you know, I would love to hear a little bit more about the climate activism. You know, this is something I'm doing, a summit that's actually in production right now, and it's going to be airing at the end of September. It's free if anyone wants to sign up. But a huge part of what inspired that was to discuss this intersection of you know, what's happening on the planet. Like I've felt for years, like long before COVID, that we're in, you know, kind of a all hands on deck crisis. Like we need to do something about what's happening. And I did start to feel that psychedelics and the growth of psychedelics and the interest mm-hmm. in healing is interconnected to what's happening on the planet. And I'm curious, what is your take on that? And how do you feel that psychedelics might play a part in us really trying to make change in the climate and the planet? And I mean, I could get into, it's like everything feels broken right now. Do you think psychedelics play a part in the healing of this?
Yeah, definitely can relate to that. This is like a topic that comes to my mind so often, because not only because of the psychedelic experiences that I had, in which I actually witnessed, you know, like this becoming one with nature and feeling more connected with the planet, and really, you know, realizing that if you are part of nature and if you're a part of this planet, you're going to treat it differently. Like you're going to take care of it like you take care of your own home. So I do believe like psychedelics can have a big role in helping us reconnect more, but also in the constitution of our ecological ego, in which we see ourselves as a part of something bigger and not just, you know, as humans, something better than nature or something completely disconnected from nature. We can see like very clear that in the past years, this is not bringing us in a good direction. So as well, like for a really long time working with matters related to climate activism and education around that, I have had a lot of climate anxiety, and like with the most recent events in the world, that didn't help me much. But a big part of my psychedelic experiences did help me see things differently and see things in a better light, and think about like, okay, what are the things that I can do today to actually feel like I'm making a difference on a better direction in this situation? So in my ideal world, if in the future this goes mainstream and is more accessible to more people, I would definitely imagine it could help more people to really reconnect with the planet and take things altogether in a better direction.
That's my prayer so much, because you know, my experience of working with these plants, especially it happens with psilocybin, but ayahuasca especially, it's very obvious, at least in my experience. I don't know about others, but it literally talks to you about how to live, how to eat, how to treat the earth, how to treat your body, how to turn off water and appreciate water and don't let it run. And I mean, these are very minute things that are maybe not going to make the shift. But if every human on this planet started waking up and realizing how precious, you know, the earth, the plants, the sacred waters that we need to protect, and the environment, the climate, everything, how it was all interconnected, how we are actually, it's a symbiotic relationship. We're dependent on this, and we can't keep taking this for granted. And so this is definitely my prayer with the increase and the popularity of psychedelics, is that it will have this kind of larger scale impact, even if it's through one person at a time. But we all know, and especially I'm sure you know about this, you know, what's going on out there, there are people with a lot of influence and money and power who are now working with psychedelics. And this is where, I've sat with people who are working in government in ayahuasca ceremonies, and I'm like, well, this is good. This is good news. So I always feel hopeful and positive, although yes, there's so much anxiety around. It's, you know, every day we turn on the news, there's something else where, you know, we're like, well, what does it take? You know, it's kind of like, it's like being in a really long psychedelic journey right now, where there's these waves of the ups and downs and the darkness and the...
definitely. That's how I feel like since the whole pandemic started, it's basically like that. It's a weird psychedelic journey for the past, almost 2 years.
It's crazy, right? Now, I have a few few questions. Let's see which I'm debating which way I should go first. So I'm curious. You're living in Amsterdam right now, where these magic truffles are legal. From what I understand, they're completely legal. Can you tell us? And you've traveled all over. Can you tell us the difference between, you know, working over there and being able to sit with people where it's completely legal versus, you know, here in the U.S. where it's decriminalized in a couple places, but it's completely illegal. Do you feel like it's made a difference in, like, you know, the society over there, or is, like, everyone doing it? Like, what's the reality of, you know, are people just buying it on the streets and tripping around on the streets? Like,
yeah, wow, that's actually an interesting question, because, you know, the Netherlands is a country that they are very different from all the other countries I have been in relation to being open about drug consumption in general, like here with the festivals and, you know, weed and everything like that. It's everything very accessible and, like, quite good quality, even in terms of the illegal drugs. But that's also, there is also where it gets a little bit, the laws here, they work in strange ways, I would say. So, like, basically magic truffles, you can buy on smart shops. Anybody, yeah, can buy them. Tourists can buy them and go trip balls in the city, on the park, whatever. But magic mushrooms are illegal. So you can buy as well, like, growing kits. But from the moment the mushroom grows from the ground, that's illegal. So there are a lot of, yeah, I don't know how to explain that. But when it comes to psychedelic guidance and working, yeah, in a more therapeutical framework, then that's the advantage that we have here, because it's legal to do so. Even recently, Field Trip opened one office here for that as well. So that's, it's really amazing that we can actually bring this type of experiences to people in a way that they feel safe, that they have, like, qualified guides, that, and that they know that they are there to experience this without feeling like they're doing something that they should not. So I think that's the difference from other countries as well, like, in terms of getting the truffles and knowing that this is, these are good truffles and they are safe. I think it is also, like, for the guide, much better, because you are much more in your comfort zone and knowing your ground and not having to worry about, like, the consequences of that or being punished for your work. So I think, yeah, this is the best part of this here.
That's a very good point. It's interesting. Many years ago, I was actually in a mushroom ceremony in the middle of New York City. Not the most ideal place, but that's where I lived at the time. And I'm not making this up. A cop came to the door in the middle of the ceremony because the neighbors smelled sage burning. Wow. You know, the ceremony facilitator was burning sage. And the neighbors thought it was weed, even though they smell nothing alike. And they called the cops. And that was a very scary moment. And, you know, I never went back to that person because I actually didn't feel very safe. You know, it was like a room full of packed in people, all on different doses. Some people had never even done it before, in someone's apartment in the middle of New York City, where there's you know, it's like there's people everywhere. Wow. And then, you know, one thing goes wrong and the cops show up, and it was kind of freaky. Luckily, the cop just didn't come through the door, but it was a weird experience.
I can definitely imagine.
I know, right? Can you? It's like the worst nightmare come true. And by the way, yes, that's only happened to me once in, like, you know, my whatever it's been now, 25, 30 years of working with psilocybin and other plant medicines. I'm curious, you know, I've actually never known this, but are the truffles over there made with real grown mushrooms, or are they, like, synthetic mushrooms?
Ooh, that's an excellent question. They are real grown mushrooms. Okay. So basically, well, I cannot say it like that. So basically, you know, the truffles, the mushrooms, they grow above the ground, mm-hmm. and the truffles grow under the ground. Oh. So here, what they do is actually they have this farms, and then they make like the containers there, and they leave it for about 4 months, so the truffles can grow, and they are highly concentrated as well, and then you can have different strains, as exactly like mushrooms, but different. This is also like why the dose, it's usually very different as well. And you eat them wet.
Interesting. I was going to ask about the dosage, and I did not know any of this. I've always wondered, I'm like, what are these truffles really like?
Those more or less. So we work with 35 grams of truffles in a session, in a therapeutical session, and that would be about 4 grams of dried mushrooms.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. So I know, I'm like, wow, 35 is
like sounds like crazy.
But I shouldn't even say ew, because I actually don't mind the flavor of mushrooms at all. They've never bothered me, and I don't really understand how anybody's bothered by them, because they just taste like a mushroom to me. They're beautiful. Ayahuasca, on the other hand, has a horrible, horrible flavor. Wow, that's so fascinating. I had no idea. That's really interesting. Now, I'm also curious. So you're originally from Brazil. You mm-hmm. traveled around, and now you're based in Amsterdam. I'm curious... what have you noticed in your travels over the last few years? I mean, you know, granted, I know COVID has maybe put a damper on things, but what's going on with psychedelic interest or use in places like Brazil or versus the Netherlands versus other countries you've been to? Mm. Have you noticed, like, because I've heard, granted, this was a few years ago, I've heard that, you know, Europe, they're so strict and no one talks about it. I mean, even though we all know that's not quite true. There's conferences, there's psychedelic conferences all over Europe. But have you noticed like different cultures and different countries being more open versus less?
Yeah. And I think there is, you know, that's entirely up to do with the legalities of it and how like, strict the policies are in each country. So for example, in Brazil as well, we do have a lot of research happening at the moment. With different psychedelic, different types of psychedelics, although it's quite strict in general with drug, even like with weed, it's like very intolerant. But we do have like certain advantages. For example, ayahuasca is legal there with the Santo Daime or under another religious context. We do have as well, ibogaine is not illegal there either. So this gives advantages in terms of like, how people can go for certain ceremonies and for the research. But in general, like to have access to these things there, you need to know who like you can contact and who you can get it from. Here in the Netherlands, like I said, things are much more simple. It's not like people do. I feel like it's half-half. Like in the last years, it has been growing their interest for sure. So people are very open to talk about it, and they seem to be very curious about it. But of course, on the other hand, I always meet other people that like when they ask me what do I do for a living, I get like really judgmental looks and comments on that. So it's quite mixed. I was living in Thailand as well in 2019, and there it's again quite illegal. You like even more strict than Brazil is, but I could easily find ceremonies where I was living with mushrooms as well, but also with ayahuasca. And combo and all of that. So it's a big difference everywhere.
Wow. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting to see how it's, you know, perceived and accepted in different cultures and different countries, but you know, it's growing. I recently interviewed someone who has founded the Psychedelic Society of India. you know, where there's like a huge interest over there. I'm like, wow, it's fascinating. Now I'm curious, you know, something that's come up for me is if one is living in, you know, the Netherlands and they could just go buy these truffles at a store, I'm curious who comes to these, you know, like guided ceremonies that you host, or, you know, like I know there's these retreat centers and synthesis, and is it for a particular reason why people go to you versus just buying it at the store and doing it themselves?
Yes, definitely. So basically, most of the clients that we have are people that are coming from other countries, and many are traveling here just for this day session. With Psychedelic Insight, we work right now only with day sessions. This week, I had two people traveling from New York for this. I have a lot of people coming from the US for the sessions. And usually, you know, so far, by my experience, these are people that are really looking for some sort of healing. Many of them have never tried psychedelics before. They have seen documentaries in the past years about it, or they have read Michael Pollan's book. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, often they're going through a midlife crisis or a breakup, and they are trying to figure out ways how they can go inwards. And this has been, like, I would say 90% of the people I have been guiding in the past months that come to here for this. Mm-hmm. When it comes to retreats, I do not know I'm going to take part on a first retreat only this end of September. Also with this organization, we have a partnership with Heroics at Heart UK and other organizations, and we are hosting a retreat of magic truffles for veterans. Mm-hmm. So this is also for a study. So then I can get a feeling a little bit more of it and, yeah, tell you a little bit better.
They are, Heroic Hearts is an amazing organization. For anyone that doesn't know, they're taking veterans on these plant medicine retreats. And I know, I'm pretty sure they work with ayahuasca as well, so psilocybin. And, you know, there's these miracle stories all over the place of PTSD and healing from war wounds. And I mean, out of all the humans on this planet, veterans probably could use the healing the most. I mean, granted,
definitely,
so many people have PTSD. I actually believe our whole society right now is dealing with this kind of PTSD of being alive in the last couple years. That's interesting. I was actually going to ask about how many people travel from other countries, because I have personally had people reach out to me, you know, acquaintances and friends saying, hey, we really want to do this. We've never done this before. And we want to go somewhere that feels very held and safe, where it's legal. And that's where these retreat centers in the Netherlands or Jamaica, Costa Rica, you know, Peru, this is where it comes into play, where it's for a particular person, where they, especially for a first time, or especially for, you know, let's say I've encountered people with, you know, like untreatable depression. They've tried everything and nothing's working. Or, you know, really like major crises or anxieties, and they kind of don't know where else to turn. You know, I'm finding, especially like you said, people that are reading the Michael Pollan book or people that are reading all the research coming out, and they feel this sense of, you know, I've tried everything and I don't know where else to turn. And I've heard that this can be super beneficial. I'm curious, you know, as part of the work that you're doing with these centers that are holding these spaces, do you guys offer, you know, like, tell us about the process. Is there preparation and integration? Like, how do you hold, especially, I always picture like sending my mom to one of these places, although she would never do it. But, you know, I try to picture, like, what would it be like if, you know, someone like my mother went, who is older and hasn't done it, even though I think she maybe did it in the 60s. Yeah, what's the process for this?
I can tell you the process. Yeah, for the organization that I work for. So basically, we do have like intake sessions in which we're going to do some sort of preparation with the person, but also do like a screening process. So, you know, like they're not bipolar or suicidal, like, and things like that, because these are things that can get really complicated. Mm. And even though there are people, sometimes they lie about it. I did not have this situation yet, thankfully. Mm-hmm. And then we do have the immersive journey on a full day session. So here in this case, they can travel to the Netherlands and they can book Airbnb. And we, as a guide, it's two people, we're going to go there and we're going to hold space for the person for this whole day. And after that, it depends really if they want to take more time in Amsterdam and really get to know the city. What I have been seeing is like people that come here just for one day, they travel for this and they go back already in the next day because of work and other things in life. They just take like just a little time to go and do this. And after that, we do, of course, also offer integration because that's the biggest part of the process. And with Psychedelic Insights, we try to have really accessible prices in terms of session because it's already expensive for people to be traveling abroad. I think like that's my biggest frustration at the moment with, taking psychedelics in general and having... not being able to do so and then having to find ways to do so. And for so many people, it's really not accessible to travel to another country or to spend, I don't know how many thousand euros in a ceremony or in a retreat. So it's, but here as well, we do have like very expensive retreats like in every other place. So
Yeah, the accessibility and price has been a major issue. And it's, there's a lot of conversations around how do we make this affordable to, certain people that can't go fly somewhere or can't even pay a few hundred dollars, and thankfully there are people working on this and there's more and more discussions and organizations that are, starting ceremony funds or, providing centers for, certain people who can't afford it. There's, of course, not enough yet, but it's happening. So that's really interesting and good to know. I'm curious, it's funny that the people would just fly over and do this and then fly right back. I get it. I used to have a job like that where I couldn't really take the time off, but it can be such a deep process that maybe you don't want to hop on an airplane the next day, and like come back to work the day after, because it can be very jarring, especially if you went through something really big. I'm curious about two things. One, what are some of the integration tools that you have? And then also, during the ceremony, is it just holding space or is it like playing music or is it talking to them through it? Like what is the, or it, does it just depend on who they are?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like basically from my part, it's more of a sitting than guiding. So like we try to interfere the least as possible unless we have to. And sometimes people might struggle while entering the journey. There can be a little bit of a resistance, a little bit of anxiety. And that's when it usually starts like, oh, I don't like this music. I don't like this place and things like that. So, what we try to do is we are there. We know the person will know that we are there for them, for whatever they need. So like if they are having some difficulties, we can hold hand, we can bring water, we can talk if they want to talk. But the intention is still like really try to not influence or influence the least as possible the experience of this person. Mm-hmm. So as well, like part of the integration process, there are several different tools that we can use. Like usually we have the session like 1 month after the experience. So you talk with the person and how did this, the experience settled in. So like we have right after the experience and then a month later and we, depending of what type of experience the person had, you can come up with a different set of tools for how they can bring that learning into their lives without having to have like an extreme, a complete change of life. So this way it's easier to, yeah, bring little by little a few changes in which that they feel like, yeah, they could really take something out of this experience and incorporate into their routines and relationships.
That's the whole point, right? Which I'm curious, you know, have you stayed in touch with people that you've worked with previously who have kind of reported these miracle stories? I'm curious if you have any of those, I even have these miracle stories in my own where, you know, like the first time I drank ayahuasca, I had this like, it must have been 2 seconds, like a 2 second understanding of something that probably would have taken me, you know, 10 years in therapy. And it was so simple. It was like a little simple shift. And I was like, oh, that's it. And it changed the whole relationship with, you know, my family and with how I saw things. But I'm curious, you know, have you seen people cure depression or cure anxiety or, you know, like get through something big or change their whole career? Or like, what are some of the big stories you've seen over the years?
This often happens. I think for everybody, it's like this click. Very often, it's not like you're learning something new, but like you just see something you already know in a different perspective. And then suddenly you have this click and you're like, oh, it was me all along or something like that. But I think like the biggest changes for me that I have been seeing are like a lot in my social circle, even of friends that have taken psychedelics and started this journey much later than I did. But also as well in my life, like for the past 1.5 years, like my life completely changed. Because of mushrooms. So like, that's kind of crazy. Like if you think, yeah, you're taking, yeah, these beautiful plants for the first time and like 1.5 years later, you are working with these plants and you are providing information about it and really seeing like, how can you bring that to more people? Because it can be beneficial for so many. I have friends here that they did change their jobs or they started learning a new language or people that I know that, you know, like they are having a corporate career and then they quit everything and they moved to a different country to live on a van. This is like totally possible. I think that happens a lot more with people that take ayahuasca though from the stories that I've heard. Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's kind of this like pseudo joke yet serious about like, okay, do not quit your job, break up with someone, get a divorce, sell your house, move out, like wait a few weeks or wait a couple months, people say. You know, I was one of those people who kind of slowly made the changes, like started chipping away at things, you know, like I knew I was going to move from New York City. It took me a few years because I had lived there for so long. I knew I was transitioning into a different business. You know, I'd had a previous business. But I have seen people do the whole, you know, like, okay, I'm just done. And, you know, this is where I say get support to help with the integration. Yeah. To take the steps so you don't do anything that's, I mean, one of the reasons I started even talking about this idea of psychedelics helping you come into your purpose and maybe shift into a career path that's more aligned with your heart. One of the reasons I made it is because I did see some people in my community who they either did the two extremes. One was they didn't make any changes at all, ever. They would just go do psychedelics over and over and over and over and like not integrate them and not make any change. And then I saw a few people do the opposite, which was like quit everything and move to the middle of, you know, the mountains in Peru or, you know, like play guitar for 2 years and then run out of money and be like, oh, shoot, what am I doing? You know, I've seen people who shunned money altogether and said, I'm just going to live off donations. And then a year later, they're like, maybe that's not a good idea. Mm-hmm. You know, so, and I do believe there's a way to integrate these where there's a way to make the changes and a way to make transformation that is about, you know, yes, you can change your career. Yes, you can go live in a completely different place. Maybe it's not about burning it all to the ground the day after the ceremony, though. And this is where getting support mm-hmm. from, you know, like professionals, from guides, from coaches, from healers, you know, integration help is so important. And that's, you know, this is what my calling is to help people make that change with growing their business, starting a business, you know, coming into mm-hmm. Something that was, like you said, it was already inside of them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that the psychedelics just tell you something new. It's that it's like, okay, well, that was kind of already there. I just wasn't seeing it.
Exactly.
I'm curious, you know, what you've seen over the last, you know, especially the last year, it's been kind of a crazy times. You know, is there a theme? Like, do you see people... Mm-hmm. You know, is there like a most common reason why people are turning to psychedelics, in your opinion? Is it like, or is it just personal drama, like me and everybody else has?
Well, definitely. Like, you know, in the beginning of last year when the pandemic started, I think we are all caught up really by surprise that suddenly all the connections we had and all the time we could spend with each other, this was all cut very suddenly and very fast. And this had a big impact on the lives of people. It had a big impact on my life for sure. But also throughout the years with this ongoing lockdowns and living lockdowns, there are a lot of people that have problems at home or that they don't have a safe home environment. People that, you know, like... We have like really high rates of depression and anxiety. They were already skyrocketing before the mm-hmm. pandemic started. And then when people are isolated and they cannot have like our most basic human need, that is connection, these things, they just got amplified, sadly. What I did see here is a lot of people started turning into psychedelics during this period. I think because of how easily accessible it is to get them here, even the synthetic ones, LSD, 2CB. But, and that's like, I feel like that's quite a good thing in general. More people were taking psychedelics on the weekend, whether it was like at home or with the few friends they could meet, mm-hmm. instead of turning into drugs like alcohol or anything like that. So I did see an increase on that, and I read like articles about it, so that's a positive thing. But I do think that's, yeah, in big part because people are, yeah, they were struggling or they are struggling much more with mental health. Even here, it's really hard for people to get access to a psychologist or psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. You need to be like really on the edge in order for you mm-hmm. to get somebody. And it's, you know, it's a country that it's like, it's a very good country to live. So that surprised me at all, like a lot. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, no wonder people are, yeah, looking more into this and looking for alternatives and other ways that they can connect more with themselves and try to take more care of their mental health after mm-hmm. the pandemic. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I had read those articles as well about people, you know, an increase in psychedelic use during the pandemic. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, you know, there's not many, you know, many options, and you don't want to go into the downward spiral of destruction with opioids or, you know, like addictive drugs or even alcohol. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that I my ex-partner is from Europe, and he's a therapist. He's a body-based somatic therapist based in the US, and he was telling me that it's kind of common in certain parts of Europe. I don't know about everywhere, but where he was from, like Northern Europe, it's culturally not as like acceptable to go to a therapist. Like here in the US, where I almost find it surprising when people don't have a therapist. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like mm-hmm. it's part of it's especially, you know, I lived in New York City for so long. It was a very common thing. Like everybody in New York had a therapist, you know, it was, mm-hmm. you couldn't even get appointments sometimes. But I do believe, you know, these days, especially with the uncertainty, the isolation, the chaos, it feels like everything's in chaos of some sort. People are turning to, you know, like, hey, I feel like crap and I keep hearing about these psychedelics and maybe I'll try this because I don't know where else to turn. And, you know, and I do believe that this is also part of this, you know, larger scale, like questioning everything, you know, questioning like what is life all about, you know, with COVID, putting the pause on life for a while and a lot of people losing work or, you know, like their work changed and maybe they're working from home now. Or maybe work is completely different and they're really questioning like, well, what do I want? You know, and we only live once and I'm seeing this whole preciousness of life and, you know, how things are changing so fast on this planet. And I do believe that's part of this increase in looking for the alternative forms of healing. Now, Jessica, I'm curious to hear about what you guys have or what you women have going on at Women on Psychedelics and what their future holds and what your plans are over the next year. And, you know, tell people a little bit more about how they can also get involved if they can.
Yeah. So basically, yeah, like I said, we're taking a little bit slow now because I haven't had much help lately from other people. So this is also an open call for other women if they would like to join. And we're always looking for women that can help us create social media content, but also the written articles and perhaps even online events. So what we are preparing at the moment is we are helping another woman on resources, material for psychedelics and pregnancy. So that, which is something quite, yeah, like controversial. Not so many people know about it. So this is exciting. It's with Mama Delamico. And then as well, we are having a few articles that are going to come in the end of the month of September. Yeah, that's basically... yes, as well, we are looking to write a little bit more about sex and psychedelics. And for that, we have a partnership with Arielle Brown. I think she did a talk recently with the Psychedelic Society of San Francisco. So we are looking to that, how we can provide more resources in that, but of course talking about consent and caution, because these are, yeah, like I said, very controversial topics, but topics that a lot of women have been showing a lot of interest. So I do think like we do need to talk about it, because yeah, this is the only way we can have this in a safer way. So
I love it. It's interesting. I have a client who is doing work around sex and relationships and sacred sexuality and, you know, sexual healing with psychedelics and psychedelics in the relationship and sex, you know, sexuality and, you know, like partnership. And she's a mother and she's married and she's talked about how psychedelics helped heal her relationship. And I actually think it's very important to talk about, because all of us have heard multiple stories about how these have helped relationships. And I do think there are more and more people talking about it. I have someone on my upcoming summit who's talking about Tantra and psychedelics. They're also a couple. She's a therapist. He's a psychedelic integration coach. And it's interesting, the women pregnancy and psychedelics, I think would be a great thing to talk about, because again, it seems so taboo, but it's interesting. I personally, you know, and I'm not advocating for this, like do your research and talk to your doctor and all that. But it's interesting. I personally know people who have worked with psychedelics continuously throughout their pregnancy, and I know the grown children and they're perfectly fine. And I do know the lineage that I have worked with down in Peru, you know, it's not uncommon to like work with ayahuasca when you're pregnant or even give ayahuasca to children. I have been in ceremonies with, you know, not super young children, but kind of young children. And it's, you know, it's, I mean, the person I work with is like, now he doesn't give it to pregnant women, but it's an interesting topic because again, like some of us, you know, like especially the Western mind have such a view on like, you're not even allowed to eat cheese when you're pregnant. Oh my God, you can't have a sip of wine. But then there's cultures that have drank wine throughout their pregnancy. You know, it's interesting. And I love that you're doing these kind of taboo topics because I do believe it's time to be discussing all these topics that people are afraid to talk about or have been hiding in their closet. There's so many people that have contacted me over the years saying, you know, psychedelics help me heal from sexual trauma. You know, I personally have healed some ancestral sexual trauma that runs in my family lineage through the work with psychedelics, as well as, you know, the healing with somatic therapy and integration work and other forms of healing. But this is a huge, you know, discussion to be had in our society. It's, you know, definitely. I think they say like one out of every four, or might even be more than that, people have had sexual trauma. And you know, this is not the time to be hiding and going through this alone, but to be bringing it out there and getting information and also working with the integration help, whether it's, you know, coaches, healers, therapists, to help like finally get the freedom from these issues that, you know, a lot of people are struggling with alone on their own.
100%. So, like, just to add to that, we do have like a few articles on sexual healing and sexual trauma, healing sexual trauma on the platform as well. And, you know, these are things that a lot of people don't want to talk about it because it brings them a lot of discomfort. But this is precisely why we need to go there and like normalize the conversation around it.
Yeah, no, it's so important. I'm so glad you're doing this work. Well, I want everyone to know to follow you on Instagram. You're also on Facebook. You can also check out their website. Please read the articles and share this work. I do believe, you know, this has been my intention to feature more women than men. Of course, I do have men, and give them a voice. You know, there's been moments where I thought of renaming this podcast, but I'll let you guys rename the podcast. You gals can do the women on psychedelics. I just think it's so important to have women, you know, being leaders in this space because, you know, now is the time to bring this right energy and these conversations forward to, you know, normalize them and bring healing to the entire planet on all levels.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, perfect.
I know. It was such an honor to have you here. I will make sure everybody gets the links. And thank you so much for sharing your heart and your voice and being with us today. Thank you for your work in the world.
Yeah, I thank you so much for a nice talk today. Yeah, and like, I see you soon.
Awesome. And everybody, be sure to check out my new summit, Psychedelics, Sacred Medicines, Purpose and Business. It is free. It would be an honor to have you shared around with your community. There's so many incredible speakers, and it's time to get this message out to more people. So sign up for free, share it around with your community. I appreciate your support. Lots of love to you. And we'll see you on next week's episode. Bye. I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you're feeling inspired, I'd appreciate it if you showed your love with a review. And check out my YouTube channel where you can find the video version of this podcast. You can also head to bethaweinstein.com to learn more about me and grab my free business growth trainings. Remember, you carry your own unique medicine, and your medicine is what we need for these times.